these things that people make.
This is a show about craft, zines, graphic novels, and other things that people make that are not considered fine art, and the politics involved in making them. Join me, Sarah Mangle, every Thursday from 10 to 10:30 a.m. on CFRU 93.3 FM.
I love the buildings and the pavement and the malls. I love the factories, I love the rubber balls.
Broth, vomited guts, vomit fago, vomiting corpses.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, 250 watt of community power.
Listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. And I'm starting the show a little bit earlier than I normally do into the theme song because I'm interviewing the second part of Alison Mitchell. And I wanted to cram a lot in. So Alison Mitchell is a fantastic person that I interviewed last week. She is a craft person and an artist and a fat activist and a queer activist and really funny with words. And I originally wanted to interview her because she did this show called A Journey into a Girl's Journey into a Well of Forbidden Knowledge last fall from October to November at the Ontario Art Gallery in Toronto. And I wanted to interview her because the show talks about the Lesbian History Archives and talks about queer sexuality and human sexuality and has some ceramic cats in it covered with gold foil. It's really cool. And I was really curious about her. And so we finally met up a few weeks ago and this is the second half of our interview. I will say that if you're just listening to this half and not the last half, that this is the meat of it. These are the goods. I would encourage you to listen to the other part because it really sort of introduces you to her practice and her history. But if you haven't heard that part, it's okay. Because for the most part, you'll know what we're talking about. We are going to just start off with the interview. If there are pieces while I'm listening that I need to fill you in on, then I'll do that because the interview is divided up into some parts. So you are listening to These Things That People Make. My name is Sarah. Sit back and enjoy this interview with Alison Mitchell that we did in her home. The way that I originally interacted with the pieces, I started reading all the book titles to figure out how many of the books I had or how many of the books I'd heard about. And just like really enjoyed reading the book titles and really like felt like. Okay. Before I keep playing the interview, I just want to back up. So, I want to describe for you a little bit more the show so that you have some more perspective on what, Alison is going to and I are going to talk about. So her, Alison Mitchell's show at the Art Gallery of Ontario this fall, had three walls that were drawings of book titles that she found at the Lesbian History Archives, which are located in Brooklyn, New York. And they're all real book titles of books that deal with issues of lesbianism and queer sexuality. And then in the center of the room, there were two figures that were metallic and very tall. And there was a mirror on the floor, and there was a cat, at least one cat that was gold foiled. And then from the vulvas of the two figures, there was some knitted wool that went up to a brain at the top. It's very aesthetic, lots of silver, and purple and all the books were drawn with pencil. Okay, so that's what I want to tell you, and then we'll go back to the interview.
Aesthetically, the space is set up in such a satisfying way that, like, I just like felt comfortable and comforted and excited to read all these books.
Right.
And
I would like if it was a nice, comfortable place to sit.
Yeah.
Always, yeah. In every art installation, but.
And then I read the blurb, and the blurb was in this way in particularly serious, and I was like, yeah, but this is also hilarious, right? Like, this is also really funny. Is this not really funny?
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe the AGO doesn't think it's funny. Like, there's just this fun.
Yeah.
This funny,
well, I think it was just about having to. I think it was people were scared.
People were scared.
It was going to. It had to be worded in a way that people could understand that this fits into a history of.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
And I liked.
But I would have liked to have something that meant. Nobody has ever said anything about those incredible labias on those sculptures.
Yeah.
Which to me, like, they're giant pudendas and enormous clits poking out of their labias. Nobody's said anything about that. Which is partly why I want to call it what time there is the.
And what I had thought was happening, my theory around the viral title versus the other title was, I was like, the AGO got freaked out and cut out the more provocative title.
No.
And that's not what
happened. They would have let me have it be that name for the show if I wanted it to be. But I really just want to do this kind of like, I felt like What Time Is the Labia Closed was like a community title that was kind of like for us to get to have.
It's a great title.
I know it's a strategy. I don't know if it worked or.
And what was the organ at the top?
It's a giant brain.
Oh.
So they're attached by their crotches to this giant brain.
Okay.
I know it's not a perfect brain, but.
I wasn't sure what it was.
It tries to be a brain.
I thought it might have been a cervix.
Well, it could work too.
But do you feel like, in this piece, do you feel like there's humor in it for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought so too. Like, in the write-up, it was like places for lesbian history. I was like, yes, I agree. But I was like, also, this is funny.
Yeah.
also, I'm in a giant, like, Alison Bechdel comic right now. Like, also, you know.
Yeah. I know. Maybe I should have said that at the end of the artist statement. Also, this is funny.
But I felt like in that way, it's in an interesting layer of like inside jokeness where I was.
But it's
like,
also funny to you, but for somebody who's never. I think it's like. Okay. The idea that. How do I say this? Okay. Michigan Women's Music Festival. Problematic as it is around issues around gender and trans inclusion. Mm-hmm. I spent some time there in the 90s, and there's always this thing about the only time that cis men came onto the land was when they were coming out to suck the shit out of the Port-a-Janes or to drop off ice. Like, big bags of an ice truck would come on, and like maybe twice a giant food truck would come in. And they get escorted by dykes all the way along who'd be yelling, "Man on the land, put your tops on," so women weren't topless. And it's this idea that that men are wanting to be like, like, look at, like, they'd be masturbating uncontrollably or something.
Yeah.
But they are not. They are terrified.
Yeah.
And as they should be.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of heteronormative on the land, that somebody who has no experience of anything queer culture, any dyke history, walks into a space like that and they're like, what? There's books?
Yeah.
There's books? And there's more than a shelf of books? Like, that was, I think that's really serious. And I kind of like the serious tone for that, for people to see that. And
for even librarians, like, even seriously, like, public librarians. Guelph has a really great volunteer-run gay and lesbian queer library. And I almost wept the first time I went in there. Because I was like, here are all the books I could not find at the library, public libraries anywhere. All these titles I'd heard referenced in academic text, I could not find them.
Yeah. That's awful. Yeah. Right? Well, and people ask me if those were real titles, if I made them up. There's nothing made up, not a single one.
No. You are listening to These Things That People Make. I'm your host, Sarah Mangle. I had the great joy to interview Alison Mitchell a couple weeks ago. And you're listening to an interview with her. We just talked about her show that happened at the AGO in the fall, A Girl's Journey into the Well of Forbidden Knowledge. We're going to go to the next part of the interview really soon. You're listening to Marissa Anderson in the background from her album The Golden Hour. Super badass musician. You should check her out. I do want to just give you a little bit of background on the next part of the interview, because the part that I'm playing... there's a piece that is not airing that is useful. So I told a story to Alison that is not going to be played. And that story was telling a story of the experience of being around sort of liberal environments or so-called queer positive spaces, which aren't in fact queer positive. And by that I mean being able to sort of freely talk about my life, but having... being met with silence or being met with people wishing that I didn't say anything because I feel really uncomfortable. So this experience of being a queer person who can be out in lots of different areas of my life, but that doesn't actually mean that I'm being accepted or that I'm being welcomed. So we're talking a little bit about that, the liberal climate of tolerance of queerness.
And that's the kind of thing that I'm really interested in with my work.
Hmm.
From the Sasquatches, lesbian feminist Sasquatches, to a room that's a vagina dentata, to a crazy public-private labia library, is this social lie about... being accepting of quote-unquote diversity, being accepting of lesbian and gay men, and, you know, in a country where we can get married, but it feels like such a cultural lie around that kind of stuff when I know, like, you know, you can walk down certain streets in the biggest city in Canada, in the context where you're supposed to be accepting and okay, holding hands with somebody who appears to be of the same gender, and you can get bashed. Or even just somebody says something to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like, it's that lie that I want to, like, pick the scab off of. That it's, like, making this work that's sweet and familiar with the materials and, like, it's seductive in the materials. But it's got this message that you can't ignore.
It's totally unavoidable.
Whether it's about fat bodies or dyke bodies or queer bodies or whatever that people would choose to not see or look away from, make it as big and
as bright,
monstrous as possible. Yeah.
What is it? The word on your website, maximalist?
Mm-hmm.
That's a great word. This idea where that... In your practice, where part of it is just making it so visible that it is unignorable.
Yeah, and that's the maximalist part, too. It's like maximum politics, maximum emotion, maximum materials, maximum scale. So it's I feel like also the platform of it has to be the maximum space so that I can build on it so that it can't get pushed over. So that's where the maximalist comes from. Rather than, you know, fat women trying to take up less space or... that kind of... Rather than cowering, just, like, stomping through a quiet space.
You are listening to an interview with Alison Mitchell, craft person extraordinaire. We're going to go back to that interview now.
I'm wondering about, from Riot Girl, from when Pretty and Porky were and Pissed Off were around, from, like, queer activism at that time to now, like, what your impression is, or, like, where are we now in relation to that time? What's your impression of what's happening with, like, queers taking up space and with fat queer people taking up space or fat activism?
I don't know. It feels like it's a really exciting time that it's, like, I think about the activism that happened around the G20 or the activism that happened around Pride this year was mm-hmm. the best, most exciting time I can remember for a long, long time. Mm. So that all feels really, really great.
What made it the most exciting?
The caring about anything that has to do with Pride. Like, I normally could care less mm-hmm. about anything that has to do with Pride because of its sort of white, normative, male-centric stuff. And that the folks that came together around, you know, there were all these town hall meetings and small direct actions that happened mm-hmm. around trying to... I love the airing of queer dirty laundry in public about people not just sitting back and spooning big gobfuls of bullshit into their mouths and mm. resisting it in really beautiful, colorful ways. So, you know, Take Back the Dyke was like a highlight for mm-hmm. a decade for me of amazing community that it's really heartening how big it is, mm. how many people there are, how many people who aren't conformist, who don't want to rally around some kind of fake rainbow unity, you know? Mm-hmm. I love that. It was really, really super exciting.
And you made the Pride as a Pyramid Scheme piece.
Which was so fun because...
So beautiful.
Ended up leading the parade, which Woo! I had no idea that was going to happen. And it was just, you know, it was so sunny and warm yeah. and such a beautiful, beautiful moment. And after all the stuff with the G20 and people, there was such a kind of crackly electric feeling in the air because everybody was so scared because mm-hmm. we were going to take over the streets like the weekend after the G20 mm-hmm. shit had happened. Mm-hmm. People who were there had been arrested, and it was really scary. But then as soon as we turned the corner out on the university, it was, you know, you were there. Mm-hmm. It was just like, try and stop us. But also, and then I was looking around at the sidelines and thinking, well, there's nobody here to see how our amazing shit. And I was like, there's nobody here. This is the best Dyke March ever. It was so good. And, you know, there's all these people on bikes who were, you know, when you're on bikes, it's really hard to go super slow, but the marshals wanted us to keep it really, really slow. Mm-hmm. And bikes kept trying to go out around us and go in front, which is understandable, but it would just be, according to them, unsafe because they didn't, you know, they weren't blocking off the intersections and stuff. So every once in a while, these big butches would be like, ladies, stay behind the crochet.
I wish you had audio of that.
I know,
you
me
could
too.
Use that. You could use that.
I'd like to make that my ring on my phone. Yeah, yeah, it was beautiful. It was so great. And they had to be like, get on their bikes behind the crochet. was the authority.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was great.
Whoa.
So that kind of stuff where we are right now yeah. feels really exciting. And also, you know, the stuff that... I've never really been a part of that anyway, but divided communities with boy queers and female queers separated, it feels like there's a lot of that, of togetherness, which is exciting. And also, you know, like different geographical spots, like the Hen House and having and the Beaver and having these places to go to are really exciting that aren't, that don't have to do with a gay ghetto or anything like that. And lots of really amazing young people doing fantastic stuff. It's great. So you get to have like kind of institutions like Inside Out and stuff like that and Pride and critique them and hold them accountable and yell at them, but also just non-institutionalized amazing shit happening too.
I learned a bunch about Sky Gilbert, and then to see people like Sky Gilbert also hold people like held accountable. Like there's those kinds of moments where I'm like, you are a new hero in my life, and you are following through.
Yeah. 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 And actually that person who was the first person who gave me that Super 8 camera and was like, you gotta make culture, was my ex-girlfriend Jane Farrow, who had been asked to be the marshal of the Dyke March this year, and she turned it down.
Right on.
And I really feel like that was a big part of getting a lot of folks galvanized behind Take Back the Dyke. Mm-hmm. I think people were sort of, I'm gonna wait and see what other people do in response to this, and I really feel like her saying that made a lot of shit happen that was really great.
You don't know me. I'm not just one of your little toys. You don't own me. Don't say I can't play with other boys.
Are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. Background music, Klaus Nomi from his self-titled album, cover of You Don't Own Me. And we are airing an interview today with the amazing Allison Mitchell. I interviewed her in her home in Toronto. And if you want to learn more about Allison Mitchell and her work as we are doing this interview, you can go to a couple of websites. You can check out her website for her work, allisonmitchell.com. And Allison, her name is spelled Allison. And also you can check out the AGO's website, because we were talking earlier in the interview about that exhibit. And if you want to see a picture and see the description that they have on their website at the Art Gallery of Ontario, you can go to www.ago.net/Toronto-now-Allison-Mitchell. And we're going to continue the interview now. This is These Things That People Make with Allison Mitchell.
Whose work inspires you, and what stuff you're working on now?
I'm really inspired by, I love Sherry Boyle. She's one of my favorite artists of all time. I'm very inspired by Ridiculous in New York, and the stuff that they do is really amazing to me. And I love getting little snippets of pockets of scenes in San Francisco and Brooklyn and Regina and Vancouver of cool stuff that queer women are doing. So that's the stuff that's really inspired. Like the Anchor Zine archives and stuff like that. Amazing. Or her Jazz Noise in Vancouver, that kind of stuff. So, right now I'm working on two really big projects that I'm not really hands-on working on right now because I'm teaching a lot until the semester's over, which is really fucking soon. I will be working on my research, which is my actual artwork, but I have to call it that now that I'm a full-time professor. So I'm making dysfunctional food chains with a collection of, I have about 200 found needle points of food and animals and stuff.
Whoa.
So I'm going to make, you know, those food chains that you see in science textbooks. So, you know, critiquing agribusiness and bodies and health and evil, how scary food is right now and how hard it is to find good food for lots of people. So that, dysfunctional food chains. But I'm also working on this giant project, which is, you know, those haunted houses that happen in the U.S. that are put on by evangelical Christians?
No.
You heard of these? Where you go through a haunted house and you pass through these different vignettes that people are acting out, different scenarios of things that you're going to go to hell for.
Oh, my God.
And they're really problematic. There's a really amazing documentary called Hell House. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
It's like, you know, the girl who's dying from a botched abortion is going to hell. The fag who's dying of AIDS is going to hell. The girl who tries to commit suicide after her father molests her is going to hell. And then at the end of the haunted house, you can go into this space and either accept Jesus Christ as your savior or go out into the street. And it's like, we showed you, you have to make your choice. So...
wow.
I know, but I want to do, and I got asked by a curator last year to do one of the big projects at Nuit Blanche in Toronto. Mm. And so when I went to New York, I was like, okay, I don't know what I want to do. I don't think my work really fits for Nuit Blanche, but let me percolate about it. And if I come up with a good idea, I'll let you know. And then I came up with the world's best idea, which is a lesbian feminist haunted house where you go through these different vignettes and you see things like, paranormal consciousness raising, or women's studies professor and riot ghoul dance parties with flaming bowls of hummus, and textbooks, you know, being incited into like ecstatic riots and stuff like that, or like the butch dyke who's chopping up those truck nuts. You know, those truck nuts that you have seen them, and if you haven't, you will now. People put them, there's lots of them in Guelph. People put these latex balls on the back of their truck.
Oh.
And so ever since I've seen those, I've always wanted to do something where there's
on
a
the back
chopping,
of their truck.
Where? Like on their trailer hitch. So there's these latex giant balls bouncing as they drive down
really?
The fucking highway. So now in my haunted house, they're going to have a different purpose. And there'll be a butch dyke chop, you know, like chopping them up. And then you go through a tunnel at the end, and there's all these stuffed animal cats made into a tunnel. It's like supernatural pussy, and there'll be a hole in the wall where somebody in a scary cat costume, like, touches you when you go by.
Wow.
So I'm working on the lesbian feminist haunted house. But the curator...
That sounds great.
Flushed the idea, so it didn't happen last year because he... said his reason was that it was too big for Nuit Blanche, where
that doesn't make any
people
sense,
take over entire football fields, hotels,
but that's
shopping
the whole
malls.
Premise of
I know we know what the problem is, don't we? We know
back,
what the problem
coming
is.
Back.
You're listening to These Things That People Make. It's been an interview with Allison Mitchell. I want to say a huge thank you to Allison. It was lovely. It was a lovely interview. I feel thoroughly inspired to make art that is too big for Nuit Blanche, which may mean just too gay for Nuit Blanche. But hopefully we'll see the lesbian feminist haunted house somewhere soon. I hope to help it make it happen. I hope to participate. So in the background right now, you're listening to Deerhoof's new album, Deerhoof Versus Evil, their song Super Duper Rescue Heads. I want to say a few things before we sign off and go to Locavore. Please visit my blog, thesethingsthatpeoplemake.blogspot.com. That's where we have lots of information about shows past, and you can sort of get a sense of all the things that we've been doing, and photos of people, awesome people. And if you want, now on the blog there's a link to Radio for All, so you can listen right from the blog or from Radio for All to the shows. But if you know there's a show that you doesn't have that capability and you want a copy of it, please get in contact with me. You can email me at sarah.mangle@gmail.com. This program, These Things That People Make, is now available on the Program Exchange of the National Campus Radio Association. I'm very excited about that. So it's downloadable to all campus community radio stations across the country. It's also available for download at radio.